Okay, so we're in Hilchot Deyot in Perek Gimel. We're in the third Perek, and if you look, you especially see this in the Hebrew version. Okay, Perek Shlishi is really a short chapter. Okay, it's we've been in Bet Gimel for a bit. We're in Gimel now in the last halacha. We'll either finish today or tomorrow, but Perek Dalet, if you look, is a whole different experience. And what we're going to do, it's basically a page in Hebrew. And what we're going to do is, we're going to just take a quick look at it. We're not going to go through the whole Perek, you'll see why. But I want you to realize that Perek Dalet, the fourth chapter, is really all about, it's all about healthy living. It's all about healthy eating. And it's interesting that the Rambam believes, and you'll see in a minute why I'm mentioning this here, at the end of Perek Gimel, because he sets the stage for this. It's all about the fact that, you know, your body is your temple, and Hashem gives you a body, and you have to take care of it, right? And you have to eat healthy, and you have to find balance in everything. And if you find balance in it, and you find balance in what you eat, and you find balance in how you exercise, and you find balance in what you do, and you find balance in how you sleep, everything, right? You got to be careful, because you can go a little nuts trying to be balanced, right? Being balanced means you're not going nuts. So if you find yourself going nuts being balanced, you're off balance, right? Okay? So you can go a little nuts with that, but... okay, so if you look in, I guess most of you guys have English, so if you look at page 59, okay, we'll just sort of go back and really go through today and tomorrow Halacha Gimel, the third Halacha, okay? So, Hamanhig Atzmo Al Pi HaRefuah. Now what this means... it's not just that a person sort of, you know, lives according to the rules of medicine, but that a person's looking for healthy balance. It's interesting that the Rambam here is responding, sort of, to a whole genre in the world that still is very much around today. Okay, the extreme of this is the world of Christian scientists. That, you know, if man lives by faith alone, then any attempt to meddle, Boker Tov, any attempt to meddle in the affairs of destiny, you know, are blasphemous, right? And obviously not all Christians believe this, but there is a sort of a stream, even within Christianity, and by the way, a stream within Islam, and a stream in Buddhism, not because any of those particular religions necessarily aspires to this, but more because the human condition, human nature, is that there is a certain percentage of people that will gravitate to the extreme, right? So there is a stream that says that if God created me and God puts me in this world, then who am I? You know, if Hashem wants me to be healthy, I'll be healthy. And if Hashem wants me not to be healthy, I won't be healthy. And if Hashem says a person's supposed to die, he's going to die. There's nothing you can do about that. And while we believe in that theologically, that doesn't mean that Hashem also attempts or wants you to struggle with what you're given in this world and to be a partner. That certainly is what Judaism believes. But there is, even within Judaism, a whole sort of genre of people who say tzaddik be'emunato yechiyah, that a real tzaddik lives by faith alone, right? Word alone added. That's not what the pasuk says, right? He lived by faith. Now we've discussed this until now from the perspective of sort of the philosophy of mitzvot. Like, why do you need to know why? Like, sometimes as a parent, you get a kid who just always wants to know why. Okay, listen, it's 9:15. It's time to go to bed. Why? Because I said so. Well, but why? Like, I can go to sleep at 10, and I just go wake up in the morning. Let me go to sleep at 10, I'll show you how to wake up in the morning, right? You get into these dialogues when children are at a certain age. And, you know, a healthy parent knows how to find the balance. You know, on the one hand, you don't want your child to always live in the world of because I said so. That's not healthy. Like, dialogue is good. But there is a point at which point they just have to do it because you're a parent and you know better. And it's good for them to realize you know better, right? And sometimes you have to let them learn from their mistakes. Here, there's a different perspective. Here the perspective is, you know, why are you trying to figure out how the kidneys work? Why are you trying to figure out how science works? Why are you spending all your time studying the body and biology and chemistry and physics and whatever else? Because, you know, you should be learning Gemara. You should be learning Torah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you whatever you need to live in this world. Right? The Rambam was a doctor. By the way, so was the Ramban. There were many, many great rabbis who delved deeply into the world of science. The Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon was a world-class mathematician and astrologer. There are still works of his in mathematics that are used by mathematicians today. There are theories that he discovered. And by the way, it's interesting to note that the Vilna Gaon only studied mathematics and astronomy in the bathroom. He didn't want to spend his time studying mathematics and astronomy, but he's a genius. So he used the time when it wasn't appropriate to learn to do that. And what he accomplished in the bathroom was what most mathematicians aspire to accomplish in a lifetime. But that was the Vilna Gaon. Right? Okay. So, and by the way, just so we understand this, the use of time. The Vilna Gaon lived in the 1700s. He basically spanned the 18th century, I think. But here I could be getting my numbers wrong. I believe from 1703 to 1797. I might be off by a couple years. But that was when the Vilna Gaon lived, right? He sort of presided over the rise of Hasidut. He was a vehement opponent of Hasidus. Anyway, why did I mention this? This is going to fit with this. I remember when I was in... I don't remember, it was in 9th grade. I think it was 10th grade. And I had a Rebbe. Just as an aside, right? We were talking. You know, he was very smart. He used to do this 15-20 minute schmooze, right? Before he got into Gemara Shir. Because he knew that the guys came to school, and it took a while to get them into it. And we always thought that we were sort of, you know, drawing out an extra 20 minutes. You know, the high school, can I ask a good question to get it going? And it took me years to understand that every day we had those 20 minutes. He wanted those 20 minutes. He just let us think that we were getting them, you know, by whatever. Anyway, so one day he said, you know, I was reading a history book in the bathroom. And we were in 9th grade, actually, and all the guys started giggling. So he said, well, what's so funny, right? So nobody wanted to say. He said, you think it's funny I was reading history in the bathroom? Right? So guys giggled again. I don't know, did the guys giggle? Laughed, okay, right? And so he stopped what he was doing. He said, listen. He said, I want you to really think about this for a minute. He said, how much time a week do you spend in the bathroom? He said, I'm not talking about, like, you know, the manly walk in, stand up, and walk out. I'm talking about sitting in the bathroom. He said, you got to figure you're spending 5 minutes a day in the bathroom. He said, and then there's the Shabbos chillin' stop, right? So you figure that that's a good 10 minutes. So if you think about that, you got a half an hour a week. Some people spend as much as an hour a week in the bathroom. That would not be unseemly to imagine that a person spends an hour a week in the bathroom. He says, that's 4 hours a month, right? That's 48, call it 50 hours a year. That's 200 hours while you're in high school. He says, that's a college course. He says, think about it. He said, that could even be a college degree. He said, so what, you're going to waste that time? Why waste that time? Use that time. Study something. He said, so me, I study Jewish history in the bathroom. He says, I don't study Sifrei Kodesh, obviously, but, you know, whatever. I thought that was an amazing idea. I thought, like, I'd never thought about that before. So I went through all of Ginsberg and Grisel's Jewish history books in the bathroom, and I only read them in the bathroom, and I went through all of Jewish history in two sets of volumes twice while I was in high school in the bathroom. There is something to be said for that, because... Pardon? Well, we're not going to get into specifics. You can decide what you want to do with it. Right? Some people read the paper, and it doesn't matter. The point is that time is a commodity. Right? Do you use time, or do you waste time? Right? Right? Everything that you do, as you're going to see, everything that you do has purpose. Right? Okay. So, Hamanik Atzmo Alpira Fuwa, the Rambam here is also giving a little shtuch, not on purpose. Right? This was the early version of the YU philosophy of Torah Umada. That Judaism doesn't necessarily believe that science is the antithesis and that we have to fight the study of science, but that science is a vehicle to understand the world. Right? So if a person lives according to this, and in this case he's talking about, you know, medicine, you know, if you believe that medicine is valuable, and you study what medicine says, and you live your life according to what's healthy, right? If all you're concerned with is just that you have good health, it's not good. Why is that not good? I remember there was a fellow who was on some talk show when I was in high school. I don't remember his name, but he was like a famous guy. And he was supposed to be this incredibly healthy person. And he was like in his 80s, and he looked like, you know, he was 65. And, you know, one of these guys who lives till, you know, whatever, and he's healthy, and he bench presses, whatever, and they talk about all this stuff. Right? And he was on some talk show. And he was like, you know, Mr. Healthy. He only ate the right things, and he only did the right things. And then at a certain point, he was caught doing something terrible that had to do with, you know, younger women, whatever. And so, what was the point of all... Like, what's the problem here? The Rambam says, Elia sima liboshi hegufo shalim v'chazak kidei shetiyem afsho yeshara l'dat Hashem. Right? This is what we were talking about last time. that you have to be able to separate the means and the ends. Having a physically healthy body is only valuable if you plan to do something with that body that's worthwhile. Right? If you're just physically healthy and you meet these people, they're out in Central Park every morning and they spend hours and hours, you know, building up their bodies. But for what? Just so they can have healthy bodies. Is that the point of having a healthy body? Healthy body is a vehicle. The question is what you do with it. Right? The reason to be healthy is because if you're unhealthy, you can't do what it is that you want to do in this world. You can't serve Hashem. And think about it, okay? Last night, ask yourself how much you slept, whether you slept enough, and why you slept. Like, why did you sleep? Right? Do you sleep to serve, or do you serve to sleep? Some people, you know, they work 9 to 5. We call them in the army Tesha Efes Chamis. They go in at 9, they do 0, and they come home at 5. And all they're doing is getting through their paycheck so that they can get the paycheck at the end of the week and go out and get boozed. Right? But Judaism says, even B'shach B'cha, even when you sleep, you're sleeping for a purpose. The question is what that purpose is. Right? Pardon?
What does he say? Shilo Banim Osim Ra'achtov Ra'amalim B'tzarchal?
Right. In other words, if the whole purpose is, right, that you'll be healthy so that you can have children, and the children will be healthy, and all this is just so that you can, like, imagine you have your business, and let's say you're a wood chopper. Mm-hmm. So you got to stay healthy so you can chop wood. And why do you chop wood? So you can build a business. Why do you build a business? So your children have a business. Well, why do your children have a business? Right? They have to also be healthy so they can do the business. What's the purpose of it all? Just so the next generation and the next generation and the next generation just to chop wood?
Yeah, so everyone can live comfortably.
That's amazing that you do that. That's amazing. You just, like, that's very good. Like, just right in, okay? Is that the goal, though? Pokato, is that the goal? Is the goal just to have a wood chopping business? Or is it that the wood chopping business is a vehicle for something? That, I think that's what the Rambam is saying here. It's not just to be shalem. Shlemut, to be whole, to be healthy, to be well fed, to be well rested, is only valuable if there's a reason that you do it, right? You can't. You ever sit in the Beis Medrash and you're trying to study something, but you're just so tired, you know, and you're just like, you're fighting it, right? First of all, if you have a moment like that, that's a good moment. Because that means that you're pushing yourself a little beyond your comfort zone. But if in that moment you realize, if I had slept 8 hours last night, I would be getting more out of this moment, then that's valuable. Like, you gotta capture that. You gotta learn from that. And even that's only valuable if that night, or whenever it's possible, you actually decide to go to sleep earlier than you normally do. What about the opposite? What about if you go to sleep at like 8 o'clock one night, and you wake up, you oversleep, the next morning you wake up at 10, and you feel great, right? But you don't really do anything with your day. Like, let's say you're on Pesach break, and you just lie in bed all day. So you feel very well rested, but what were you well rested for? To do nothing? That was the point of resting? Just to do nothing? Right? And by the way, it doesn't mean it's necessarily about learning. Like, you're an Eretz Yisrael, there's a lot of things you can do with your break. Right? But the question is, what is it that I do all of this for? That's what the Rambam is trying to say. Right? You can't serve Hashem if your body isn't working properly. Right? And a person should also, we're going to see why he says this in a minute, but a person also should have in mind, like when you have children, the children aren't just to have children. What do you want for those children? What's the purpose of having a child? What's the purpose of anything in this world? Kate said, so how does this work? So he gives a few examples. Kisheyisavi yiteng, o yasem lacha litol tzachar. Right? Person does business, or he does work for pay. Lo yebeli bo likbots mamon bilvad. Right? The person is not doing this just to get money. Like, don't see the acquisition of money as an end in its own right. Like, that's not the goal. Now, you would think sitting here in the basement, this is obvious. But you will be amazed how many people there are in this world that actually see that as the goal. And when you sit and talk with them, they don't get what you're talking about. And you really start to see this, by the way, in university. In university, there's a whole stream. It's interesting how people change. How you have a whole genre of people that have a bigger picture. They believe, and I'm not talking about Jews, by the way, necessarily, that have a bigger picture and they want to do things that are good for humanity. You know, I saw this clip on one of the news programs about people in New York City that just stopped what they were doing. They were out in the streets trying to collect food and all sorts of things for people in Haiti. And you know, like, there's a bigger goal. And then life kind of wears you down because you got to get that job. And the reason you got to get that job is because you've got to earn money, and that's what makes the job good. What makes the job worthwhile is what you earn. Like, why is being a lawyer better than being a plumber? Think about this for a minute. I mean, we can pay lip service to this, but deep down inside...
It's not just the money.
Pardon?
It's not just the money.
So what is
some
it?
People, I could think of several people off the top of my head who became lawyers just for the money.
Sure.
Of course, but there's more to it than... I mean, you can...
But forget about some people.
You might not want to do physical labor. I mean, many people don't want to do physical labor.
Okay, that could be. So a kindergarten teacher. Like, if you're good with kids, why wouldn't you become a kindergarten teacher? Being a kindergarten teacher is an unbelievable responsibility.
It's
you
probably
take...
More probably feels more rewarding.
It's very rewarding. I taught first grade for a year. It's an unbelievably rewarding experience. It's a very difficult experience. It's a very hard job. It's not high pay. They don't pay first grade teachers what they should, right? And so here you have this opportunity to become a lawyer, go to law school. It's harder to get into law school than to do an educational, you know, sort of preschool degree. You can become a kindergarten teacher, right, in most places, certainly in Jewish schools. You don't really need a degree. You come in and substitute a few times. The kids love you. You love them. And they'll offer you a job. You know, there aren't that many good kindergarten teachers. How many male kindergarten teachers are there? Probably not that many. Right? Why do you not consider, right, on the other hand, if you were offered the opportunity to be a pediatric neurologist and you decided to go in for that, it wouldn't just be because you love neurology. You like the idea of making a difference in children's lives. So why would you do it as a kindergarten teacher? So if the difference is because you really believe that your mind is capable of understanding the brain, but what if the difference is because one of them has more prestige and more money? And it just sounds better. And when you're dating and someone says, what are you? What do you do? And you say, kindergarten teacher, it feels different than I'm a pediatric neurologist. But why does it feel different? Do you understand that that's the shtus of Western society? That's just nonsense. Right? But it's one thing to say it's nonsense. It's another thing to actually inculcate that it's nonsense. Like, when you think about what you want to do, is money important? Well, money's only important if it's a vehicle to doing good things. But if it's the goal, right, then something's wrong. And that's what the Rambam is saying here. Right? And the reason the Rambam chooses this example is because you can talk about this till the blue in the face, but measure this on your character and see whether you're really capable of divorcing yourself from this Avodah Zarah, right? Now, by the way, the Rambam does not say that a person shouldn't desire money. Look at this line. Lo yiyeh b'libo likbots mamon bilvad. It shouldn't be in his heart to make only to make money. Which means it's not bad to want to make money. The question is why you want to make money, right?
You can't, where are we you in? Can't attach
We're
that
on
much.
Page 57. The second to
you
lines
can't
in the
attach
top.
That much significance to saying Govad, because it's not like the only by money he says Govad. By everything he says Govad.
No, he doesn't say anything by everything Govad. Yeah. This is back to the discussion we had at the beginning when we were learning Hilchos Tshuva. I told you that when you learn, you have to know sort of the perspective of who you learn with. So my perspective, which comes from my Rebbeim, which was really Chaim Brisker, is that the Rambam was very, very careful about every word that he used. You don't have to learn the Rambam this way. There are people who don't. But by and large, the traditional way of learning the Rambam is that the Rambam was very specific about his words. And you see very often that the Rambam will quote things from all over the Talmud. Like, we haven't been doing that because I wanted to move. But you could take any one of the Mishnayot and I could show you where it comes from in Mishlei, where it comes from in Pirkei Avos, where it comes from in the Medrash, and where it comes from in the Rambam Shemona Prakim. Right? The Rambam changes a word here and changes the word there, and I think he does it specifically. Whatever. And by the way, sometimes in this commentary down here, if you decide to look at it, right? 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 You're acquiring money in order that you can use the money to gain for yourself the things that are valuable. Right? To get married, to be able to eat and to drink and to have a healthy living. Right? And why do you need those things? So now you got those things. You have food, you have a wife, you have whatever you have. Don't have those things just to enjoy. Okay, so now I got there. I got my house. This is what they call in America the midlife crisis. What's a midlife crisis? What's a crisis? Crisis is...
Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. We're in Perek Gimel Halacha Gimel. We're on in the English. We're on page 57. In the Halacha and the Rambam. I'm going to find a few in here.
It's Perek Gimel, the Halacha Bet.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. We're in Bet. Right. Okay, we're back in Bet. Right. Okay? So, I'm sorry. Right. We're back in Bet. It's if you look in the Hebrew, it's over here. Lo yebli boli kibbutz mamon bavad. You got it the second line. I'm sorry. I apologize. Right? No, I didn't mean to go back to that. But okay, I guess it was good to go back to that. Right? This is this parak, by the way, unlike his previous brachim, is not separate units that build a pyramid. It's a topic. It's a topic in and of itself, and it's all intertwined. Right? The chenk shiocha and when he gets these things, like people do that, they work so hard, and they kill themselves. They work 100-hour weeks. Go find a guy who's a third-year lawyer, right? Okay, he's been to the best law. He went to Yale Law School, and he got a job in a prestigious firm. I don't know the names of the prestigious firms, but whatever, Mackenzie Bracken, whatever they are, right? He finds a prestigious job. And what they basically do to a first-year sort of employee in a law firm is he becomes a slave. He's not even an associate, right? And he works like a dog, and they give him all the dog work and the research and whatever it might be, and he's working 100-hour weeks, and he's at the beck and call, and they give him a special phone now. I have a friend who just became a lawyer, and they give you in your orientation, like the first week of law school, of your job, they do this whole orientation. They wine you, and they dine you, and they get you to take the job at their company. And then once you're there, they give you a week or so just to whatever. Then they show you your little cubicle in some dungeon where you're working with, you know, 50 other, you know, new, you know, employees. And what they give you is they give you a phone. And the phone has the data and the phone numbers and whatever else of all the other people in this company, which could be 1,000 people. And it has all the legal laws and terms that you need and all the judges' numbers in the district that you're in and all whatever. And they tell you that this is your lifeline and that you're expected to answer this phone anytime it rings, and since there's caller ID, you know if it's another associate or a partner or whatever it is. And if you get a call from a partner, that's your God. You become enslaved to this phone. It doesn't matter if it's Saturday morning at 6 in the morning. If he calls and says, I need your help, you're done. So you're willing to do this. Why are you willing to do this? Because you're being paid, and because if you get through this 2 or 3 years, you become an associate. And why are you willing to work like a dog as an associate? Because then one day, 8, 9, 10 years down the road, you'll become a partner. And when you become a partner, then you get a great salary, you get a great office, and you get a great house, and hopefully you find a good wife, if you haven't lost your first one in the process of going through this. And why do you do all this? Like, what's the purpose of all this? Well, the purpose of all this was hopefully because you wanted to make a difference in the world. Did you make a difference in the world? Are you making a difference in the world? So what happens is people get to this age, they get to 40, 45, 50, whatever it is, and they get there. They've acquired the house, and the food, and the wining, and the dining, and then they don't know what it's for. Is this all it was about? Was the purpose to do just this? Right? It's like the concept of vacation. Like, there are people who live from vacation to vacation. They work so hard all year so that they take their 2 or 3 weeks off and go traveling. Right? Think about how depressing that is. That means that 11 months of your life, you're getting through so that you can live for a month. Right? I know people in chinuch, they never take vacations. They don't really feel the need. I don't think of it as vacation. You know, I'm with my students now, and if the yeshiva's on break, then I'm with my family now. I'm learning with my students, or I'm learning with my kids, or I'm learning with my wife, or whatever. And if we go on a teal, or even if we go away somewhere, I'm not taking a vacation, I'm not escaping life. That's part of life. It's a different aspect of building the relationship with life. I don't not daven when I'm on what you call vacation, right? Just because I'm on vacation. My life doesn't essentially change. I'm just in a different environment. I have more time to focus on other things. Right? Because everything that you do for the same purpose. Okay? Eliochal dvarim amoalim laguf. You eat these things that help the body. Right? Okay? And that's basically what this process is. Shinimsa shotev ochel derech refuah bilvad. If you look in the continuation of the halacha, if a person is eating and drinking, right? Oh, I'm sorry. And he says here, Ketzad. So how does this work that you eat things that are good? Mishaya b'saro cham, like if you're very hot, lo yochal basar v'lo dvash, you don't eat meat or honey. V'lo yishte yayin. It's interesting. When a person is sometimes you meet people that are overheated. You don't drink wine, says the Rambam, when you're overheated. It's not good for the constitution.
Kenyan shamar shlomo. Do you mean like stressed up?
No, I mean physically overheated. Sometimes a person, you know, your body it has a temperature gauge, and I don't know. Let's say you do something and you work hard and you ever like walk into a room and everybody's cold and you're hot, Sometimes it happens because you exercise. Sometimes it happens because you're just moving around a lot. Sometimes it happens because you have an adrenaline rush. In a moment like that, you don't drink wine. It's not healthy for you to drink wine then.
But why is he bringing up
according to the Rambam?
Because the Rambam now is talking about how, as an example, this is the lead into Perek Dalet and why we went back to this halacha, right? To chapter 4. Because the Rambam is giving an example of how I find balance in what I eat. But the goal is not to be balanced in what I eat. The goal is that that balance in what I eat allows me to be balanced in my life. If a person's only eating and drinking for the purpose of, you know, for medicinal purposes, kideshi avrivia mochalim, so he can be healthy and stand sort of whole and you know, because you can't live without eating and drinking properly. But that's not the goal. That's just a vehicle. By the way, the same is true. In other words, there are things in this world that Hashem gives us to enjoy. But that doesn't mean that enjoyment is the goal. There's a larger goal, right? You don't get married and have relations just for the pleasure of it, right? There's a bigger purpose to it. And that's what gives it meaning. And that's wrapped up in the experience. Right? Sometimes a person does these things for health purposes, and sometimes a person does these things because he wants to have children or because he wants to develop a relationship, whatever it may be. That's why, by the way, sort of physical relationships that are outside of a meaningful relationship with purpose become purely for the purpose of physical pleasure. And that destroys the soul. Pardon? And that's why physical relationships that are outside the larger picture of sort of meaningful purpose become relationships that are purely for the pursuit of pleasure. And ultimately that destroys the neshama. That destroys the soul. You don't have to look far. Look around you in Western society where any attempt at relationships as part of commitment has long since become passé. So that's hedonism. It becomes all about me. There's no larger purpose. That destroys the neshama, because the essence of the neshama is that it's part of a bigger purpose. And this brings us back to halacha gimel. Right? So this is what we said. So hamanahiga small pirafuah. So if a person sort of lives his life according to this medicinal to healthy, right? So if a person is only doing this in order to be shalem, in order to be healthy, right? Ein zo derech chavah. So we said that that's not a good way. A person should pay attention that he should be healthy. So that he'll be able to develop a relationship with him. No, the bigger picture. By the way, this is true with anything. You know, it's like, I had this big debate with somebody recently from a different yeshiva, who believes that all the yeshivot should get together and make a decision that there should be no iPods, no laptops, no cell phones. We should leave technology back. Technology has destroyed the yeshiva experience, because there was a time that a boy left the world behind and he immersed himself in the yeshiva world, right? And I said, look, on a certain level, that's true, right? And you could make a case for saying that maybe because of your idata derot, because of where people are coming from, that they're just not capable of that transition. But there's another side to it, because if you can't teach a person how to develop a relationship and live a life of Torah with his cell phone in his pocket, learning to turn it off, then you've basically taught him that the only way to develop that lifestyle is when it's not there. And as soon as he leaves the yeshiva world and goes back to that life, then he can't have that lifestyle. It's the same thing. Can you find balance? If you're sitting on your laptop, and you're up on your laptop till 3-4 in the morning, right? So that isn't in and of itself evil. Suppose you're up until 3 in the morning because your parents really, really want you to finish your college applications. And even, by the way, if you've decided you're not going to Columbia, but they really at least want you, they've given you this year, apply to Columbia, see if you get in. Doesn't matter. If you're doing it out of kibbutz avim, or you're doing it because you think that's a really good college experience for you, we could debate whether that's right. So that's a legitimate reason to stay up till 3 in the morning. There was something out of sync in the fact that you let it get to the point where you have to stay up till 3 in the morning. But maybe what was out of sync was you were enjoying yeshiva so much you put it off until Thursday night. But if you're staying up till 3 and 4 in the morning on the laptop because you're watching a good movie, and because of that you blow the next day, which is really the reason that you came here, so that means you're off balance. You have to find that balance in your life. And everything in life, you ask yourself, so why am I really doing this? Right? I think that there are experiences that we have, especially as a result of our being in Western society, that cause momentary amnesia. Like, you don't think about this. You don't sit and watch a television program and say, what is the purpose of this? Does God want me to be in this moment? But you can absolutely have that thought process before you sit down. You know? I mean, so, one of my kids had his birthday this week, right? And we said, like, what do you want to do? Like, you know, kid gets to a certain age, so it's not like we're going to make you a birthday party and invite your friends. Like, no, it's like, what would you like to do for your birthday? So he, you know, I said, you want to go to a movie, you want to go bowling, you want to go out for burgers, you know, the family, what do you want to do? So he said, no, I really would love to just stay at home, we'll get a movie, and let's have a movie night. We'll get popcorn, like, we never do that. So I said, great. So he got to pick the movie. Wasn't my choice of the movie. Wasn't a bad movie, it wasn't evil, but I didn't feel like, I remember one year one of the kids wanted to do this, and we saw this incredible movie with Will Smith called The Pursuit of Happiness. Have you ever seen this movie?
Yeah.
That's an incredible movie. You're sitting in that movie, and you're just feeling like you're growing, right? That's just a magnificent movie. This was not even close to that level, right? And I was thinking, like, wow, this movie's a waste of time. But while I'm sitting there, I'm watching. So I'm, like, less watching the movie, and I'm more watching. I think, by the way, it's a very healthy thing when you're in that hypnotic stage of I'm watching TV to practice being able to pull yourself out and look around you. Next time you go to a movie theater, if you decide never to go to a movie theater, it won't be the end of the world. But next time you go to a movie theater, take 2 minutes in the middle of the movie and look around you. It's very interesting to see. Turn around and look at the faces of the people in the movie. They've divorced themselves from the world. They're just, that's what they do, right? Okay? You meet some girl and you want to go out with her because you want to get to know her. What do you do? Sit in the movie. Let's not talk to each other. Let's just watch something. Right? Okay, fine. So sometimes you can step out and you can get to see, and I'm watching my family. I say, you know, this is not a bad thing. Like, they're enjoying it, and people are making jokes, and they're laughing at this, and they're laughing at that. Like, if you did that once in a while in moderation, you could debate whether that would be the best way that I would choose. And just the fact that he felt, that my child felt that he had chosen and that the family had gotten together, you could debate that. But it's the same idea. Everything has its place, and everything has its point. At least ask yourself, is there a value to this? Why am I really doing it? Right? Okay? And Nimtza ha-malech b'derech zo kol yamav. Okay, we can actually finish Perek Gimel if you're willing to go to 10:05, okay? Nimtza ha-me'alech b'derech zo kol yamav. And so a person who does this all of his days, this is the top of page 61, right? In Halacha Gimel. Ovedet Hashem tamid. A person who practices this all the time lives in a constant state of Avodat Hashem.
It doesn't sound very moderate to be practicing this all the time.
Well, why not? How would you define moderation? If the definition of balance and moderation is that it comes from Hashem, then it's precisely the ability to be connected to Hashem all the time that allows me moderation. Right? I mean, and that sounds like a very daunting goal. The Rambam, like, it's interesting. The Rambam could have said this at the beginning of Perek Aleph and Halacha Aleph. He could have said the goal is to be Ovid Hashem all the time. And you'd read that and be like, okay, that's crazy. But the Rambam gets to this towards the end of Perek Gimel. He's given you three chapters to get you to this space. Right? And this is an absolutely doable thing. And I don't know if it's so easy to get to the point where you're in a constant state of Avodat Hashem, but it's definitely easy to get to the point where your ability to be in a state of Avodat Hashem is more now than it was before. And that's the goal. Afilu b'sha'a she'noseh v'noten v'afilu b'sha'a she'boel. Like, whether you're having relations one day with your wives, or whether you're in business. You're sitting in a boardroom, and you're doing a deal, and you flew to China. Are you immersed in Avodat Hashem? Is it just about the deal? Is it just about the money? Or is it about the bigger picture? You know? I mean, it's like what's going on in Haiti this week. That's like unbelievable. I have a good friend who's the director of emergency services at Shari Tzedek. And so I saw, we sit next to each other in shul. So I came in Shabbos morning to shul, and I saw he was sitting there, right? And I was like, you know, I wasn't sure if I would see you this Shabbos. I wasn't sure if you went down, if you were going down to Haiti. So he told me that they had a big staff meeting about it because, you know, they were debating who should go and should he go, because there was a whole contingent from Shari Tzedek that joined the Israeli mishlachat. There were 200 Israeli doctors down there, right? And he said that one of the head of cardiology in Shari Tzedek, what he does in the reserves is he's responsible for overseeing putting together the field, the largest field hospital in the Israeli army, which is what went down to Haiti. So he obviously was going. And the head of their nursing department in Shari Tzedek is responsible for the dispensement of medicines in Pikud HaOref, in the rear guard in the Israeli army, which does this. She was going. So they realized that a lot of their heads' departments really needed to go, so they decided, like, unless someone had to go, like, so he decided not to go. So he was saying to me that he was, you know, he was actually, you know, I mean, as much as he felt he could give a lot, he was quite happy that in the end the hospital decided it was better for him not to go. I said, yeah, why? He said, well, you know, the guys down there are going through a nightmare. So I said, yeah, I imagine a lot of them are going to have to go through post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, treatment. He said, oh, no, all of them will be. And I was thinking it was because of what you see and because of, he said, no, it's not because of what you see. It's because of the decisions that you have to make. And he gave me an example. He said, on Friday, because they talk to them every day. He said, on Friday, they brought a girl in who was 9 years old, and she had a fractured pelvis. And basically, to go in there and do whatever it is you do to save this girl's life, because she's bleeding internally, is a 12-hour operation. But at the same time, there were three other kids who had other life-threatening injuries, and their operations would take an average of 3 hours. So they had to make a decision. Right? They only have X number of surgical operating theaters and X number of doctors, and they couldn't do both. So they had to put this girl on the side so that they could do three other operations and save three children. But basically what that meant was that they were telling this girl they weren't going to be able to operate, she was going to die. How do you make a decision like that? How do you make a decision like that? So these doctors are going through enormous stress and trauma and whatever else it is. Are you immersed in an experience of Avodat Hashem? Is your question, what does Hashem want of me? Do I believe in fulfilling my purpose? I want you to know, in what's going down in Haiti, the Jewish people, through that particular mishlacha, is fulfilling its mission of being an Or LaGoyim, of being a light unto the nations. It's an unbelievable thing. So that's easy to understand how that works. Does that happen when you're standing in line for the bus? You know, does that happen when somebody bangs into your car? You know? I mean, that happened to me this morning. We were driving and there was a lot of traffic by the machzom, by the whatever the, what's a machzom? Roadblock, you know, the guard post when you come in from the gush. And it was like slow-moving traffic, and I saw a car next to me, somebody knew, so I waved, I said hello, he said, ah, hello, I didn't notice the car was still rolling, and I banged into the car in front of me. Okay, it's not a big deal, right? So I got out, and she got out, turned out it was someone I knew, right? And she's, you know, a firm lady wearing a head covering, and I'm wearing whatever. So she smiled, and I'm smiling, she looked at her back, and I looked at my front, and I said, look, I don't see any damage, but if there is, she goes, it's okay, I know you did, whatever, we were smiling, whatever, right? And then she got back in her car, and I got back in my car. And there was a fellow who was in the lane on the right. And he was watching this. And he rolled down his window, right? So I rolled down my window. He said, that was the most amicable car accident I think I've ever seen. And I was like, oh, yeah, whatever, right? I didn't want to burst his bubble and tell him that I knew whoever it was. But that's how it should be. Like, Hashem decided that your cards are going to bang. Now you have to think about why your cards banged. If you're immersed in Avodat Hashem, there's no reason to get stressed about these things. Because my whole desire, do I have to take someone else's car to the Musaf? Do I not, right? The afilu, now this is mind-boggling. Mipnei she'machshavto b'kol kedei she'imtza tzrachav ad she'yeh gufo shleim la'avod et Hashem. Because his thought process is always to attempt to fulfill all of his needs so that he can serve Hashem. I have a cup of coffee so that I can serve Hashem better. You have a yogurt, you have a cereal bowl, so we can serve Hashem better. Right? V'afilu b'sha'a she'hu yashem. Even when you're sleeping. Not when you decide to go to sleep, but when you're sleeping. Im yashen ladat kedei shetanuach da'ato alav yanuach gufo. If a person is sleeping so that he can rest and he can clear his mind, kedei shelo yechale, that he won't be sick, v'lo yuchal lavot Hashem v'hu chole, because he can't serve Hashem if he's sick, nimtzeit sheina shelo avoda l'makom baruch hu. That means that his sleep is part of his Avodat Hashem. B'shach b'cha u'v'kumecha, when you lie down, is not the decision to go to sleep, but the act of sleeping is as much a part of your Avodat Hashem as what you do when you're awake. Now, I'll leave you this question, because I see we're not going to finish this halacha today. I'll leave you this question. Why in this halacha does he say that this sleep is avodah l'makom baruch hu, as opposed to Hashem, as opposed to Elokav? Why is it the makom? There are certain places where you find baruch makom baruch hu, hamakom yinachem otcha. So tomorrow we'll get into a discussion about this. How does this relate to the concept of Hashem as the makom? Okay, and I do believe tomorrow Bezot Hashem will be able to finish halachas Perak Gimel, and over the course of the week we'll finish Perak Dalet, because we're not going to do all of Perak Dalet. You'll see, it's very technical. And those of you who really want to study the Rambam's health system, you don't need means. Just understand the words. And then by next week, we should be up to Parakeh, which is interesting stuff. Okay? Okay, food for thought, book or toast.